It's practically a coming-of-age ritual for women. So it's suitable to see variations on the topic here, including a female-on-female version in Julia Crouch's Beach Ready Body. And then there's Laura Wilson's Sex Crime, which combines stalking with a very singular kind of betrayal and the all-too-topical gaslighting. Social media shows up too, although Amanda Jennings' Etta and the Body is really about loneliness and the need for real connections, a concern that has always been with us. Our plugged-in world and the yearning to be seen can also be self-destructive, as illustrated in Sarah Hillary's 10 Things You'll Miss About Me. These killer women know a thing or two about men. The prey has to know its predator, as surely as the predator knows its prey, possibly better. Several of the men here are ambitious to a fault, with definite ideas about what they want in their partners and dangerous misconceptions about what their partners want from them. There are bad partners galore, but also good men, or are they simply too good to be true? That's another question that women probably ponder more often than men do. The one constant, I think, is wit. To be a woman in this world requires wryness and wariness in equal parts. It's fun to quote Kipling, but the statistics don't bear him out. We are not more deadly than the male. Still, would you deprive us of seeing ourselves as protagonists, of imagining stories that transcend the crime novel cliché in which a pretty woman dies and a man feels bad? Writing a story in which an abusive man is pushed down the stairs won't change the world, and it won't begin to address the broader problems of racial injustice and inclusion, the latter of which the crime fiction world needs to address. But in the moment, whether one is the writer or the reader, such vicarious acts can feel pretty damn good.
Smoking Kills by Erin Kelly. I can't believe you're cheating again, said Olivia. She would not cry. If she cried, Jez would tell her she was being a typical over-emotional bloody woman again. The line he used when he considered an argument closed. And this was far from over. The tears were on their way, but the muscle that held them back was getting stronger. I can't believe you lied to me. Jez's eyes went to the coffee table. Art books arranged in neat piles framed the thrown spoils of Olivia's snooping. A half-smoked pack of Marlboro Gold and a cheap Bic lighter. For Olivia, these confirmed the warning signs. A dullness to the teeth it had bleached when he quit. The sudden appearance of mouthwash in the ensuite. Jez deflected the accusation. I can't believe you've gone through my pockets like some kind of jealous housewife. God, you're acting like I've slept with someone else. Could you get some proportion here? He did this, belittled her feelings into submission. She wasn't going to stand for it this time. Well, it does feel like an infidelity. We promised. We said we'd do this together. We'd support each other. You know what the experts say. You've read all the... Jez cast his eyes up in a look that said, if you mention research one more time... Olivia answered as if he'd spoken. It does, though. All the research says that couples who quit together have like 10 times more chance of staying smoke-free than couples who don't support each other. Her voice trailed off. She felt stupid for trusting him. After all, a husband who could lie to you about big things wouldn't think twice about having a sneaky fag in the back garden when he thought you weren't looking. Looking at him now, sneering down his long nose at her, she realised that he'd lost any respect he'd ever had for her. I never knew before all this what a nag you were, he said. I was an idiot to think you were different. I'm astonished, really, that you kept the act up this long. He'd hit her rawest nerve. Hadn't she always been the cool girl? The wife who let him do what he wanted? They had never disapproved of each other's lifestyles, never bought into all that suburban nonsense. Their relationship was never going to age like that.